It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Stripe Tap to Pay on iPhone came along and changed everything. With Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. No more juggling different methods. Just a simple tap on my iPhone and transactions are complete. What's truly remarkable is how Stripe caters to all my customers' preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Stripe ensures a smooth checkout experience every time. Setting up Stripe was a breeze, taking just minutes to get up and running. From local markets to global retailers, Stripe helped me expand my reach and grow my business with ease. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
Terry Tindill has supported Independent Tech News Directly for 5 years. Be like Terry. Become a DTNS member at patreon.com/DTNS. This is the Daily Tech News for April 26th, 2019. It's a Friday, and from Studio Feline, I'm Sarah Lane.
Fresh from the end game, I'm Len Peralta.
And this is Allison Sheridan of the Podfeed Podcast.
And I'm the show's producer, Roger Chang.
Tom Merritt is out in Vegas today, having a good old time. We hope so anyway. But the four of us are going to hold down the fort. I'm going to start with a few tech things you should know. Let's start with Uber. The company disclosed that it plans to raise up to $9 billion in its IPO at a market cap of up to $84 billion, which would put Uber at one of the largest IPOs of all time. Uber reports projected Q1 2019 revenue of between $3 billion and $3.1 billion.
Hi, this is Matt
and Sean
from Two Black Guys
with Good Credit. From a local business to a global corporation,
partnering with Bank of America gives your operation access to exclusive digital tools, award-winning insights, and business solutions so powerful you'll make every move matter.
Visit bankofamerica.com/banking for business to learn more.
What would you like the power to do? Bank of America, N.A., copyright 2024.
The Claude 3 model family from Anthropic is your one-stop shop for enterprise AI. With models at every point on the price-performance curve, you no longer have to make trade-offs between intelligence, speed, and cost. Claude 3 Opus sets new industry benchmarks for intelligence. Sonnet strikes the perfect balance between skills and speed. And Haiku is the fastest and lowest-cost model in the market, perfectly designed for high-volume, high-speed use cases. Join the thousands of enterprises who trust Anthropic to keep them at the frontier. Visit anthropic.com/Claude today.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Stripe Tap to Pay on iPhone came along and changed everything. With Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. No more juggling different methods. Just a simple tap on my iPhone and transactions are complete. What's truly remarkable is how Stripe caters to all my customers' preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Stripe ensures a smooth checkout experience every time. Setting up Stripe was a breeze, taking just minutes to get up and running. From local markets to global retailers, Stripe helped me expand my reach and grow my business with ease. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
$1 billion versus $2.58 billion in revenue for Q1 of 2018. Well, that sounds good. But Amazon, at the same time, revealed in its latest quarterly earnings that it's in the process of making free one-day shipping the default shipping option for Amazon Prime customers. Company CFO Brian Olsavsky stated the company has been working on improving its logistics over the past quarter, saying, "We're already starting down this path. We've expanded the number of zip codes eligible for one-day shipping," but added, "It will take us a significant amount of time to achieve." The company says it will reveal more details in the second quarter of the year. And Slack released its S-1 filing in advance of going public, reporting revenue of $400 million and a net loss of $139.8 million for its fiscal year, which ended in January. The company reported over 10 million daily active users, with more than half located outside of the U.S. Slack reported 88,000 paying customers, up 49% on the year, with customers paying over $100,000 annually for the service. That's up 93%. So that's a big jump. Slack reported that in the year, paid users spent more than 90 minutes per day engaged on the platform, and that over 1 billion messages per week are sent by users. Under risk factors, the company listed the need to create systems to stay in compliance with data regulations like GDPR.
That's really amazing to me that you can have a successful business with 88,000 paying customers out of 10 million daily active users. That's phenomenal.
Yeah, I know. It's a strange world we live in. Speaking of, well, I don't even know if you call it strange anymore, but we do have some Facebook updates. Allison, tell us what's the latest.
I am shocked to report that the New York Times reports that the New York State Attorney General's office plans to open an investigation into Facebook's unauthorized collection of 1.5 million email contact lists since May 2016. By the way, that's contact lists, right? Not contacts. Right. Facebook has stated the collection was unintentional and that the contacts were used to improve Facebook's ad targeting, build social connections, and recommend friends. Since reported by Business Insider last week, Facebook turned off the functionality and stated it was in the process of deleting the data. The company said it is responding to questions from the Attorney General's office.
All right, Allison. At this point in the world of Facebook, you know, half the time I'm like, do we have to talk about Facebook again? But this is pretty significant. And I think at this point, my question to you is, when the company says, hey, we didn't realize what was going on and we're rectifying it best we can, how much do you believe them?
You know, the first 8 or 10 times, I'm sorry that I breached. I'm sorry that I did something I said I wasn't doing. I'm sorry I kept doing something I said I wouldn't do anymore. We're a little bit thin, but did you guys report yesterday that user accounts are up and it was up a fair amount on Facebook?
Yeah. The quarterly earnings report for Facebook. I mean, it's the company is not losing users, certainly worldwide. It is gaining the majority of the world's population.
I do think we need to get to a world where there are penalties for doing this. You know, I mean, I'm glad to see the state's attorney's office looking into it, but you know, let's put some meat behind that.
All right. Well, this might make you feel even worse. Meanwhile, Facebook notified Ireland's Data Protection Commission that it discovered hundreds of millions of user passwords associated with Facebook, Facebook Lite, and also Instagram, which is owned by Facebook, stored by the company in plain text format on its internal servers. The DPC began an inquiry in relation to this issue to determine whether or not Facebook has complied with its obligations under relevant provisions of the GDPR. There's that acronym again. The Canadian government is looking into a similar issue as well. So, yeah, it's kind of a worldwide thing here.
Yeah, well, this one is not as bad, though, because this is a case of where they said, yeah, we were studying our internal stuff and look what we found. We found plain text passwords. So we screwed up again, but they came to them, right? This story is not about they got caught.
Yeah, no, it was definitely
working as designed.
Yeah, this is what happened. We're letting you know.
Yeah, that's going to go on for a little while, it appears. Well, iFixit responded to Samsung's request to pull its Galaxy Fold teardown, but apparently not directly from Samsung itself. iFixit said in a statement, quote, we were provided our Galaxy Fold unit by a trusted partner. Samsung has requested through that partner that iFixit remove its teardown. We are under no obligation to remove our analysis, legal or otherwise, but out of respect for this partner, whom we consider an ally in making devices more repairable, we are choosing to withdraw our story until we can purchase a Galaxy Fold at retail.
Who's the partner?
Yeah, and what leverage does Samsung have over that partner that they got this partner to say, oh, please, oh, please, oh, please, won't you take this down?
Yeah, I mean, iFixit this is what iFixit does. So the fact that, you know, the Galaxy Fold has been folded indefinitely is obviously plays into the story here, but it is somewhat odd for iFixit to say, listen, third party came to us. You know, Samsung wants this down. We want to play nice with third party. So we're doing that, end of story. And maybe it is the end of the story. You know, it's clearly Samsung wants to scrub all of the Galaxy Fold's opinions until it gets a few things right, better, you know, in the next iteration. But it is, it's interesting that it was worded the way that it was worded.
Yeah, yeah. It definitely just makes you want to ask more questions. And I think the iFixit report was even more valuable than the reporters who all had, or many of whom had their devices break when on the Fold. Those were very interesting, and the number of them versus how many phones were out there was significant, I think. But nobody knew why. When you looked at the iFixit information that showed, like you guys talked about on the show, about how big that gap was, that, well, yeah, stuff's going to get in there. And then when you fold it, it's going to break when stuff gets in there. So that actually got to a root cause that was really concrete that we could all look at, not just, oh, you shouldn't have pulled off the screen protector that looked like every other screen protector. You know, that was... that almost felt like a red herring compared to what iFixit found out.
Well, and it, you know, again, this is a quote that iFixit put out into the world, and somebody, you know, the feet were held to the fire, it seems. But it is, again, worded in kind of a funny way where it's like, you know what, we didn't actually have a real Galaxy Fold that we purchased at retail. So once we do that, then we'll, you know, have a unit that we can be, I don't know. It's the whole thing is just, it's just sort of an odd story. And it makes it feel salacious because we don't have that third party information. You know, there's just part of the story that's not being told.
Yeah, if it had just been Samsung told us to take it down, we would have gone, oh man.
Right, exactly. Like, of course they did. Yeah, you know, Samsung got mad at iFixit type thing. iFixit's like, well, we've got this partner that gives us some, like, some models, and we'd like to get more in the future. So,
and they're real good about repairability. So yeah,
that as well.
Well, all moving right. On. Oh, yes. No, that one's yours. Sorry.
Yeah, that's okay. Lime Scooters in Brisbane, Australia, have been making suggestive and offensive comments to riders after pranksters swapped audio files on certain vehicles. You heard that right.
Wait, the scooters were hacked. Doing it?
The scooters were talking to riders. The scooters were hacked to make a variety of comments. Some of them were sexual in nature. Some of them were offensive in nature. Local papers in the city reported this information. Lime also said that the prank was not funny and that it was working to return the hack scooters to their normal state.
So this would have been fun if they'd just done funny stuff. It's too bad that they turned to offensive and sexual stuff. They could have had fun with it.
Well, some people think that offensive and sexual is also funny, but you know, Roger and I were talking before the show, because when I used to live in a different part of Los Angeles, there were scooters everywhere. I mean, littering the streets, but also being widely used. And you could see, you know, children and kids who are, like, for sure younger than what the minimum age is supposed to be to ride scooters, not wearing helmets, the whole thing, enjoying them very much. You know, I stayed out of it. I'm too much of a fraidy cat to even ride a scooter ever, but they have since creeped into my neighborhood. And so you're seeing the same stuff. You know, I just this morning walking my dog, you know, it's early, it's 7 a.m., you know, and I see a kid who's obviously trying to get to school on time, you know, riding a scooter, and it's like, and you're kind of in traffic and the whole thing. And it just kind of freaks me out. And there's all, you know, assembly people in my neighborhood trying to figure out whether or not we ban these things. And that's a whole other topic. But when I hear about, you know, pranksters making scooters say, you know, offensive things, you know, I think, like, oh man, you know, there's a bunch of kids riding these, you know, so that's where it becomes something where it's like, it's not really all in good fun.
No, that just got icky. That was icky, unfortunately. That could have been a fun story, but it turned icky. Well, ProPublica, speaking of icky, ProPublica reports TurboTax uses deceptive design and misleading advertising to trick lower-income Americans into paying to file their taxes, even though they are eligible to do it for free. Intuit, which owns TurboTax, appears to be hiding this free option from Google search by adding code on its site telling search engines not to list TurboTax free file in search results. Senator Ron Wyden said in a statement that Intuit's practices are outrageous and that he plans to investigate further.
You know, this story, you know, it hits hard, considering a lot of us paid a lot of taxes earlier this week or last week. Gosh, but yeah, it is very much true that if you're below a certain tax bracket, you know, you're making less than a certain amount per year, then filing taxes is free. And the fact that TurboTax is so widely used. I'm a TurboTax user. I've been using TurboTax for years, off and on, but I've used it many times, and it, you know, it's always sort of like, let's hold your hand through this complicated process. We are here to help
for
a small fee, of course.
Sure.
That, you know, for me, it's always been like, yeah, you know, if you're a small business, maybe you pay for a certain tier, but to obfuscate the fact that it truly is free for a wide swath of people is pretty underhanded.
Well, and if they really did put code in that exempted that part in out of Google search, I mean, that shows intent, right? You don't just accidentally obfuscate the free part.
Right.
That corporate greed at its very best. I mean, you're terrible people if that's true.
Well, okay. So let's say that TurboTax, did do this and the folks behind it were trying to get away with something that has now come to light. Now what? You know, they get fined. So, what happens to so many people who use the service each year?
Yeah, that'd be, well, I mean, the fun part would be is if they make them go back programmatically and figure out who shouldn't have had to pay, but they probably don't have access to what your actual numbers were. So
yeah, exactly.
That would be hard to tell.
Yeah
big fat fine.
Well,
make them work in a homeless shelter or something. Executives, you know, come on.
Moving on now, Waterford Upstart, which is a project started in Utah, the state of Utah, and spread across 15 U.S. states, offers an online curriculum for children from low-income families and rural communities. All right. It was awarded an audacious project grant that's being criticized now by CCFC or the Campaign for a Commercial-Free Childhood, who believe that online education in lieu of classroom and teachers will widen inequality. Nancy Carrison Page, she's an educational professor at Lesley University in Cambridge, Massachusetts, wrote as part of CCFC's letter to TED, you know, TED as in TED Talks, the organizers of the Audacious Project Initiative, quote, "Kids learn by playing, exploring, and interacting with adults, not by memorizing letters, numbers, and colors presented to them on screens." End quote. The Audacious Project offers a $280 million prize shared across 8 projects to tackle the world's toughest challenges. Roger, I know that this story caught your eye before the show, and wanted to get your take on why.
So one of the things that technology has kind of been lauded for was now everyone can have access to quality educational curriculum via their tablet, via their PC, via their smart TV. And one of the things that educators, at least the educators that I've known that are friends, was that like you're missing the crucial component of the feedback of a person next to you, in front of you, where that's where, you know, they say a bulk of the learning happens when you have kind of a back and forth. As an adult, it might be different if you learn that way because you've already been through that process, right? I've already been through grade school. I've already been through high school. So for me to take and learn things online might be a different proposition than a child whose contact so far will only be limited to personal family members, right? Their mother, brother, siblings, and stuff like that. And, you know, it's very interesting, like, you know, where you have a project or the Audacious Project, which is designed to, you know, give cash money grants to projects to help solve an issue. And, you know, using technology, it sounds good, but at the same time, does it really achieve what you want it to do, right?
Roger, like the thing I thought about when reading this, though, is that Nancy Carlson Page is acting as though we are going to put out this curriculum that you sit in front of a computer screen and that's all that this child is ever going to get. I mean, you don't know that the adult isn't there playing it with them and asking them questions and interacting with them. You don't know that.
That is true. But this program or the Upstart program is targeted at economically impoverished and rural areas, right? Which typically have both parents or a single parent working, that like you chances are that economic bracket will have less of that interaction that you're speaking of because of the economic situation that their parents will find. So the argument isn't though that technology is bad, is that for that situation, you might want to put money into something that will address their specific needs, other than assuming everyone that has access to technology will learn the same way.
Well, I don't know that they ever suggested that that would be as good as if they did have access to preschool. But if the child has no parent paying attention to them while they're sitting watching television versus no parent talking to them while they're learning something, I would contend that B was better than A. Not as good as having preschool available to them, for example. That would be a better situation. But if they don't have it at all, I don't see how having kids learn, memorize letters, numbers, and colors is a bad thing.
Oh no, I think the thrust of the argument is not so much that this is bad in and of itself, is that the money could be better used for a program again that is more beneficial to those people in that situation.
Yeah, right? I think there are a couple factors here that seem like they're not necessarily being stated but are implied, and that is, how young do you need to be in a classroom with a bunch of other kids and a teacher?
These are pre-K children.
Because I don't think if the story was about kids being able to take a lot of online courses, that there would be this sort of like, wait a second, are they really going to learn this college stuff? It's about being at a young enough age where it's not the same to be doing this remotely. Potentially not the same. Again, this is kind of new stuff. I also found Carlson Page's quote of saying that kids learn by playing and exploring and interacting with adults, not by memorizing letters and numbers and the like. I understand that sentiment. I also don't necessarily feel like I did much more than do exactly that in a classroom with a bunch of kids and a teacher back in the day, depending on the teacher. But it's I don't think that it is one of these situations that's as easy as saying, if you're all there in a room together, you're going to learn better than you would otherwise. Really depends on the kid. All right. With that, if you want to get all the tech headlines each day in about 5 minutes or less, subscribe to dailytechheadlines.com. All right, Allison, we're going to move on to discussion story that kind of came from you because you pulled a lot of your own audience on the story. And I thought it was really apropos for this Friday that we're having. And that's about learning technology. So when we talk about how do you learn your tech, what are we talking about?
Well, the question I started thinking about was I create long form video tutorials for Don McAllister Screencasts Online. They're 45 minutes. They're a deep dive into a single topic. They teach you everything you need to know about a piece of software. That's what I teach. But I started thinking about how do people actually like to learn things? And so I pulled my audience in a couple of different forums. Do you read the manual? Do you use physical books? Do you just poke around in menus? Do you do a search for what you want to know and then just watch the video or read that little bit that you found? Or do you watch long form video tutorials? Or do you read long form web manuals? And I think what was interesting about the responses is they were pretty much all over the map. And I pulled a couple of them out here. I just wanted to say was Rose. She was all over long form video. Johan starts with a book, even a paper book, which was crazy. Chris said, I used to read the manual, but now, you know what? These things are so complex. I learn a subset of it and I just ignore the rest of it. Rick and Dave both said they learn by doing. Kaylee was a poke and search kind of person. Alistair says, I just try to figure it out by myself. Dave talked about doing pair programming where you pair up with somebody and program together, which I'm a huge fan of with my friend Dorothy. And then Caleb said, poke first. Then when I can't figure it out, do manuals. And if I can't figure out from the manual, that's when I go to the video and audio. And I thought that was interesting because it just covered the entire spectrum, that there's all these different ways that we like to learn.
Absolutely. I mean, I a couple of years ago now, I started teaching myself Logic, which is an audio editing program, and it's extremely complex, mostly used for music. I happen to use it for podcast production. Who knows why I chose it, but that's the one that I use. And it is so much deeper than that what I need to use it for, but I do run into problems every so often. And what I find almost, I don't think it's hilarious at the time because I'm usually really frustrated, but there's a help menu in there, right? You know, so I say something like, capture freeze frame, or, something that you think like it'll highlight the answer if it's available somewhere within this program. And, the program will just be like, nah, don't have it. Well, you know who does have it? Someone on Google, because they've made a YouTube video about it. And then you kind of, then you kind of deal with someone's production of that tutorial video, which you either like or you don't like, or it's helpful. Yeah,
are they
or
crisp
not.
And right to it, or did they drag it out to make it a cinematic performance?
Exactly. Yes. And yeah, lots of shout outs to other things. And for the most part, it's like the answer that I'm searching for is somewhere out there, and I'll get there eventually. Mm-hmm. But it's funny how where I think it is most realistically going to be is often not the case anymore.
I'll actually give a shout out to Microsoft. Everybody hold on for me saying something like this, but I'm a big Excel aficionado, and the Excel help is extraordinarily good. I would say 9 out of 10 times what I'm trying to figure out how to do, I can find it in Excel help. That is pretty much the end of the list of programs that I use where I would say help is how I find anything. One of my favorite things to complain about is people love Pixelmator. It's a darling of the Mac and now the iPad. I mean, people just love it. But their help manual, I'll say, okay, I need to learn how to do blah, blah, blah. So I find blah, blah, blah in the instructions, and it'll say, click on the icon for blah. And whatever that is, I don't know what it looks like. So they're telling me the icon, but I don't know how to find the icon because I don't know what it's called and I don't know what it looks like. So it all depends on how well the documentation is written, whether the people really took the care from somebody's perspective who doesn't know what they're doing.
Well, it kind of goes back to our previous story where I think it largely just depends on the teacher. Like, who is teaching you this thing that you're trying to learn? You're most of us, we're talking about, non-pre-K folks, right?
But they're catching up, Sarah.
Yeah, they really are. I'm sure there are some pre-K Logic kids who could teach me a thing or two, but there's just a lot of bad information out there. And we all kind of know that, we're pretty good at being able to file away, clickbait stuff. And when it comes to getting information in general, but when it comes to tutorials, I find that at least for me, sometimes I'm so kind of at the end of my rope and so frustrated that I end up again, this is YouTube, but not always YouTube, but often just a video tutorial of somebody where I'm like, I don't know if you're a trusted source. I don't know if you're good at this at all, but I know that I need help. And so I'm searching for an answer from a complete stranger that I do not know on the internet to give me something else when I should probably be reading the manual.
So at what point is there a limitation where you no longer, I guess this would be up to the individual, but where you can't glean information, where you can't self-teach or teach yourself something? Well, like I wouldn't be able to self-teach myself how to spot weld or weld, period, right?
It's a dangerous first step.
Yeah. I'm with you on that one.
Or for example, if I tried to learn calculus on my own, I would have a bear of a time. I did much better when I had an instructor. So I could constantly pepper them with questions and get an instantaneous response instead of kind of going through this process of, okay, I don't know, let me see if I find the answer. And I got to make sure it's the right answer. Because a lot of a lot of YouTube tutorials and stuff, sometimes they skip steps. And sometimes those steps are very crucial that allow you to bridge one step to another. Where do you figure out like, okay, I got to pay someone, or I got to pay for a class, or I need to enroll in a community college course?
Well, I think Sarah sort of obliquely got to what my answer to that would be. And Bart Bouchatz, as I've mentioned quite a few times, is doing a course with me called Programming by Stealth. We're 75 or so episodes in an audio podcast learning how to program, which sounds crazy, but it actually works because he has really good tutorial notes. But what he's been trying to do is take the training wheels off and not give us answers. Like, he'll give us things in the homework to do that he hasn't taught us how to do, or there's a big, like a leap from here to here that you don't know the answer to. And what he's trying to get us to do, and I complain to him about all the time though, is to find it in the documentation, learn to read documentation is one of his big things. And so that's a big piece of it. But if a product is not well documented, that's where I think some handholding can come in. And I think the important thing to remember is that, like you said, Sarah, everybody is different. Everybody learns differently. And my favorite example of this is that my buddy Niraj and I used to work together on web development, and we discovered we were miscommunicating constantly because I speak in Cartesian coordinates and he speaks in color. So I would say, go to the upper left-hand corner, and he would say, press the blue button. Well, if he said, press the blue button, I couldn't find it because I wasn't looking for blue. What do you mean blue? And he didn't know what I meant by going to the upper left-hand corner. So we had to learn to speak each other's language when teaching each other. It was really, really interesting.
That is interesting. Well, you know who else is interesting? Everyone who participates in our subreddit, because you submit all sorts of stories. You can submit them. You can vote on others as well at dailytechnewsshow.reddit.com. We're also on Facebook, facebook.com/groups/dailytechnewsshow. Real quickly, Martin submitted an email to our mailbag and says, hearing about the test store yesterday, he was talking about Walmart, reminded me that 5 months ago, there seemed to be a big push from the Walmart Tech Labs advertising and software engineering podcast and on LinkedIn and websites as recruitment and to change their perspective in the developer community as somewhere to work in cool technology. In any case, just adding a little more info, it looks like they may have gotten some good talent. Allison, I don't know. Do you think Walmart is kind of new, cool, hip? Have they reinvented themselves?
Well, it's starting to feel like it. I mean, they're not dead yet, right? They're still thriving. So
very, very much not dead yet.
I like to hear that they are doing the AI stuff, though, because at least they're getting into something that is could be a competitive advantage and keep the competition alive. That's
absolutely. I with all of the with all the folks who are shopping there regularly, to have more options is a good thing, especially because in many cases, at least the retail experience, Walmart might be your only option. One option that we love to have on Fridays is Len Peralta. Let's check in with you, Len. You've been drawn throughout the show. What do you got for us today?
Well, you know, I have Avengers Endgame on the mind, top of mind here. And we're also talking about the best way to learn how to use a computer or your tech. And of course, everybody knows that the best way is to have Thanos teach you. And that is what the image is today. It's Thanos and little Gamora, and he's teaching her about the, which is actually my first computer was the IBM 8088 PC computer, which was at the time the most powerful computing machine available to mankind, perfectly balanced with a 2400 baud modem that can log you into BBSs and hack into your neighbor's spreadsheet programs. So
that is awesome.
Yeah, so this is available not only at my online store at lenperaltastore.com, but if you're a Patreon backer at the $5 level, you can get this right now. You can download it right now. And all you do is back me up patreon.com/Len.
By the way, if you go to Google right now and you Google Thanos, yeah, click on the glove on the right hand side and you'll have a treat. You have to sit and wait for it though.
Super cool. Super cool.
Yeah, super cool.
Thank you, Len Peralta. Wonderful work as always. So good to have you. And also so good to have Allison Sheridan. Boy, you have been contributing to DTNS quite a bit this week. let folks know where they can keep up with all the rest of your work.
Well, the best way to find me is at podfeet.com. Everything good starts with podfeet.com. But I want to give a special plug about MacStock Expo. This is a Mac Apple centric gathering in Woodstock, Illinois, right outside of Chicago. It's July 27th and 28th. It is my favorite thing of the year, other than like my own birthday. And if you use discount code podfeet, you can get some money off. It's a small conference. It's only a few hundred people. It's a great fun vibe. There's classes, there's parties, there's karaoke. You don't know what's going to happen. It's a really, really good time. Check it out at macstockexpo.com.
We appreciate everybody who supports the show. You can find out more at dailytechnewsshow.com/support. As Tom always mentions, and I'll do it today because it's in his absence, our goal each month is to get one more patron, just one more or more, but at least one more than last month. You could be that person that helps us get over the top. Become a DTNS member and get an ad-free RSS feed. You can get special episodes from Tom on how we do the show, how the sausage is made. Special episodes looking back on tech news of the past and a whole lot more. Sign up at patreon.com/DTNS. If you have feedback for us, our email address is feedback@dailytechnewsshow.com. If you'd like to join us live, well, that's good news because we're live Monday through Friday at 4:30 p.m. Eastern, 20:30 UTC. And you can find out more at dailytechnewsshow.com/live. We'll be back on Monday with Jen Cutter. Talk to you then. Good night, love.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network.
Frog Pants Network.
Get more shows like this at frogpants.com.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.
Hi, this is Matt
and Sean
from Two Black Guys
with Good Credit. If you own or operate a business, whether it's a local operation or a global corporation, partnering with Bank of America could be your smartest move.
By teaming with Bank of America, you'll enjoy exclusive digital tools, award-winning insights, and business solutions so powerful, you'll make every move matter.
Position your business to capitalize on opportunity in a moment's notice.
Visit bankofamerica.com/bankingforbusiness to learn more. What would you like the power to do? Bank of America, N.A., copyright 2024.